Call the meeting to order. All right, good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and call the meeting to order. First order of business, Shay, would you do a roll call for us?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. Michael Dobb. Peggy.
Yes, present.
Thank you. Brian Kirkland. Eddie Cook.
Here.
Thank you. Jeffrey Fleetham.
This is Anthony Giacovino, sitting in for Jeffrey Fleetham.
Thank you, Anthony. Welcome. Doug Lane.
Here.
Thank you, sir. David Byers.
Here.
Thank you, sir. Tim Rummer.
I'm here. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you, sir. Lev Garnett. J.R. Sloan.
Here.
Thank you, sir. Representative Nguyen.
Present.
Thank you, sir. Senator Rick Gray. Richard Stebnick.
Rebecca Pereira here for Richard Stebnick.
Thank you. Welcome. Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Shay. All right, well, welcome everyone to our first ITAC of the new fiscal year for Arizona. Appreciate your attendance. As you can see, we had a number of items before us. We'll go ahead. I wanna remind folks that this is a public meeting. A link has been provided in the agenda that if you have a comment you'd like to submit, you can please do that and our team will disposition that for us. With that, we'll go ahead and step into our first item of business, which will be we need separate motions for each of the past two meetings that we had to approve those minutes. So let's start with the meeting of the 23rd.
Mr. Chair, this is Eddie. I move that we approve the meeting minutes for June 23rd.
Thank you, Eddie. Do we have a second?
This is Jaggy, Mr. Chairman. I second this.
Thank you, Jaggy. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, we'll move on to the recording of the June 28th meeting.
Mr. Chair, this is Eddie again. I move that we approve the meeting minutes for June 28th.
Thank you, Eddie. Do we have a second?
Yep, this is Jaggy again, and I am seconding.
All right, thank you again, Jaggy. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, thank you very much. We'll go ahead and now move on to our consent agenda. We had we have a number of items that have been submitted for consent. The materials have been provided to the members in advance. If there's no discussion or concern about pulling any of those items out of the consent order, we'll take a motion with regards to the consent agenda.
Motion to approve.
Thank you, Mr. Lang. Do we have a second?
I second.
Thank you, Mr. Giacovino. All those in favor of approval of the consent agenda as proposed?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you very much, gentlemen. All right, we will get into our first voting item on the agenda, which will be the Department of Economic Security.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Sudhi Syed. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here by members of Department of Economic Security Project Team. I will let the individuals introduce themselves, after which I will give a brief overview of this action item.
Thank you, Sudhi. Mark Darmer, Chief Information Officer for the Department of Economic Security.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Clayton Sykes, and I'm the Chief of IT Operations for the Department of Economic Security. In addition to my project team, I have presenting with me today our Senior Manager for Enterprise Technology Services, who I will now have introduce herself.
Hello, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Carrie Allen. I am the senior manager over our enterprise technology solutions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. On June 17th, 2020, the Department of Economic Security received approval by ITAC to extend their existing Microsoft Enterprise Agreement by 1 year. The extension was approved to allow them to work on Google adoption and implementation plan. Due to several unexpected projects related to the COVID-19 pandemic, DS was unable to finalize the Google migration plan. DS's project team is here today to request a 1 year extension on Microsoft Agreement to allow them additional time to continue evaluating and planning further expansion of Google Workspace products. At this time, I will turn this over to the project team to present additional information regarding this pitch and answer any questions you may have.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, next slide, please. DES is seeking an extension of our existing Microsoft licensing agreement to run from August 1st of this year through July 31st of 2022. The extension is required in order to meet the day-to-day business requirements of the organization. Over the past year, one of the agency's primary focus areas has been on pandemic relief efforts. And this in turn has shifted the focus away from an Office 365 reduction and more towards a Google Workspace natural adoption and enablement practice. We have been able to avoid the cost of additional Microsoft O365 licenses due to the adoption of Google Workspace. And as of today, 25% of the DES employees are actively using Google Workspace in their daily work activities. The COVID-19 pandemic has, of course, had a major impact on us and the services that we provide, such that there's been an expansion in the workforce to accommodate these needs for critical services. Prior to the pandemic, the department actually maintained 8,500 user accounts, and as of June 1st, we're maintaining just under 11,000 accounts to handle the additional workload. Throughout the course of the next year, though, DES will continue moving forward with the decommissioning of Microsoft Office 365 and the continued adoption of the Google Workspace product suite. Next slide, please. So overall project management responsibilities will continue to be led by the DES PMO. Additionally, we're going to be working with the vendor SADA to perform analysis efforts, including creation of questionnaires, change management and communication documents and templates in order to plan and facilitate the necessary migrations and conversions over to Google. The plan is to begin with the migration of our technology, policy, and training teams first, with an anticipated completion date of October 31st of this year, while at the same time conducting additional analysis efforts to aid in the rollout of Google to the remainder of the organization. Ultimately, the intent is for Office 365 to be decommissioned by July of 2022. Next slide, please. The total projected renewal cost comes to about $3.6 million, and this does include all pertinent operating systems, licenses, Office 365, as well as additional software licensing like Microsoft Project and Visio. Next slide. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, in summary, the department is seeking approval to move forward with a one-year extension of our existing Microsoft Enterprise Agreement in order to maintain operations while continuing moving forward with the adoption of Google Workspace. At this time, this ends my presentation. Are there any questions?
Okay, we'll open it up to the committee for any questions on this project. I have one just clarification, Clayton. And that would be, you made the statement that 25% of the organization is currently utilizing Workspace, but Workspace is also used across the entire organization for email and calendar currently as well. Is that the case?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, yes, we are using Gmail across the organization, but we have been able to, for our UI services and our frontline services, 2,500 or so new folks coming into those particular areas have been using Google Suite or Google Workspace for other things other than Word, Excel, whatever.
So that 25% adoption is really exclusive use.
Mr. Chairman, could you please repeat that?
I'm sorry, that 25%, is that those users are exclusively using Workspace?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, yes, that is correct.
Okay, thank you. Let's see, I saw we had a hand raised by Dave Byers and then Mr. Giacobino. So Dave, go to you first.
Yeah, Clayton, I just wanted to ask, is your timeline realistic? You're a big agency with 11,000 folks. Are you able, I see you have SharePoint usage apparently in there. Are you realistically going to be able to do all that needs to be done to get it converted by July 1?
Mr. Byers, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I will defer that question to our project manager to address it in more detail, Raj Kalinga.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Raj Kalingod. I am the administrator of the Project Management Office at the Department of Economic Security. Our strategy involves a three-phased approach. Phase one is what Clayton was referring to a little bit initially, where we will be doing an analysis and migration of three divisions within DES. Based on the lessons learned from that, we are planning to engage an external organization, SADA, to conduct an analysis and review of the rest of the organization. And phase three of the project will involve conversion of as many individuals as possible to move on to Google Workspace. So there will be obviously exceptions, as in the case of some other agencies as well, but that will be determined on the basis of lessons learned from phase one and the analysis that will be conducted in phase two.
Well, I'm not clear. You're going to be doing the analysis. My question is, do you have enough information to be confident that 1 year extension is enough at this point? Or will that be dependent on what you find during the analysis?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Byers, this is Mark Darmer. We are not looking right now at moving off of SharePoint. SharePoint is a heavily integrated product within the department. We will likely separate that license out from the overarching O365 licensure model going forward and look at what the cost impact to the agency will be to move away from SharePoint. DES is heavily integrated into the SharePoint application, and so that will require a much more extensive undertaking by the department. We are looking at actively moving away from the traditional Microsoft Office suite of products, Word, Excel, Sheets, or PowerPoint, those types of applications. But we will likely maintain a SharePoint presence for some time as we start to look at migrating away from that particular product. But we will separate that license out with Microsoft when that comes up for renewal next year.
Any further questions, Mr. Byer, on that?
Well, I guess not. I guess what we have here is a one-year extension. There will be analysis. Some things probably won't be, but they can always come back. So I get it. When I saw SharePoint, I wondered, I know how difficult that is to break that kind of thing up. So thanks for the info.
All right. Mr. Giacobino.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think my question is similar to Mr. Byers, in that if I'm understanding your timeline, the integration of DTS, GIA, and OPD will occur between July of 2021 and October of 2021, with an analysis going from August through June of 22. But I don't see any kind of timeline breaking down all the other divisions in the large organization that is DTS, or DES, pardon me. Is there any more information you can provide about breaking down by division or by agency within your large department?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Giacobino, what DES is looking at by undertaking our Division of Technology Services and our Office of Professional Development and essentially our policy section, which is the GIA. Those are likely our three more complicated areas simply because our Office of Professional Development has some of the most complex PowerPoint presentations within the agency. That's where all their training is done through PowerPoint. And so we'll be engaging SADA with that conversion of those PowerPoint presentations. And then our policy section within the agency currently relies heavily on Microsoft Word. They have some very integrated Word documents. They're probably the most complicated in the agency. So with the lessons learned from those three areas, we will be able to lay out a more clear plan. Our target at this point is that once we conduct the surveys, asking our end users, what are they currently using the Microsoft Office products for? Is it something that is integrated into an application that the department administers? Are they just using it because that's what they're familiar with? As those survey responses come back in and we're able to easily identify end users that would be able to switch to utilization of only the Google suite of products, we will transition them off of those Microsoft licenses and shut those down. So we don't have a set timeline by division yet until we get those survey responses back, but our intent is that by April we will have transitioned the bulk of the agency so that we have runway for those last few months of the extension period to be able to really focus in on any remaining users and get them transitioned as appropriate off of the product.
Thank you.
Okay, Eddie, you had a hand up.
Yeah, thank you. As we all know, when this project first came to ITAC, I mean, there was a lot of discussion between the competitive bid of Google and Microsoft as it relates to the cost savings in the long term. Obviously, adding this additional $3 million kind of puts a little bit of, that cost savings story, a little bit, ambiguous here on that. Can you help me understand what was the cost savings numbers? I didn't see, I couldn't recall from the last time we did this talk, there was a lot of that discussion. What's the overall impact from a percentage-wise, how this now affects that cost savings?
So I don't think the DES is in a position to answer that question. I don't know if we have that information available readily, Eddie.
Mr. Chair, this is Mark. Just one point of clarification on the cost slide. The cost comparison, the $3.3 million on the slide, or $3.6 million, excuse me, is encompassing of all of the Microsoft licensing which DES currently has. The area to focus on for cost comparison sakes would be the O365 line item at $1.5 million. I just wanted to make that clarification.
Okay.
And I will defer to DOA for any of those cost saving comparison numbers. I just wanted to make that clarification.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, Eddie, I don't know that we have that information in front of us, but I'm happy to take that as a follow-up.
Yeah, action. I think I just want to put that on record that, sure. Again, this was, obviously a competitive bid between the two corporations, and obviously, I'm not, who would have expected the pandemic to have an impact to the business, but I just wanted to put it out there for information.
Sure. Understood. Any other questions from the committee? All right, Sudhi, back to you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, assets recommending that the pitch be approved with three conditions. Condition one, should development costs exceed the approved estimates by 10% or more, or should there be significant changes to the proposed technology, scope of work, or implementation schedule, the agency must amend the pitch to reflect the changes and submit to ADOA Assets and ITAC if required for review and approval prior to further expenditure of funds. Condition two, monthly reporting on a project status is due to ADOA Asset no later than the 15th of the month following the start of the project. Failure to comply with timely project status reporting will affect the overall project health. The first status report for this project is due September 15th, 2021. Condition three, The Department of Economic Security shall provide informational updates regarding project progress and execution of Google adoption on a monthly basis and will return to ITAC if recommended by ADOA asset.
All right, thank you, Sudhi. Members, we have a new slide that we've added in. You're going to see this as standard fare from us going forward, just to provide clarification. When we come to a voting item, the items that we are to be considering as we go into our voting, as well as the options that we have relative to any motion or final vote. So I'll take a just pause for a moment and ask if there's any questions on the voting options slide as displayed, or if that's clear for you.
Mr. Chair, I have a comment. I like the format. I really appreciate adding this feature in our meetings.
Okay, thank you, Eddie. All right, did anyone have any questions on the conditions as stated by Sudhi?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, this is Dave. I know the first condition is sort of the standard thing, but does it make sense in this? There's no development project here, is there? This is just a renewal of the licenses. So does condition one make sense in this project?
I think that's a good question. Yeah, Chuck, are you up for a discussion on that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. And for the record, Chuck Brown, staff with ADOA Asset. With any project, even a simple project of renewing a license, there's always a chance that new information comes about on short notice, right? So, and that rollout changes. So the standard condition of giving the 10% contingency, both on time and dollars, as well as maybe the scope one isn't as relevant as it would appear on some projects. But I definitely think allowing a little bit of contingency for the agencies can be helpful, even with a renewal like this. There's always things, especially with what the agencies experienced over the last year to year and a half. Does that address your question, Member Byers?
Yeah, I guess that's possible. Well, then I'll move that we approve with the conditions. But I think it would be better to strike the word development in the first condition. I don't have it in front of me, but I think you read that if the development cost exceeds, is this the project cost? There's not a development project here. So
Mr. Byers, for ITAC purposes, development cost is a technical term which carries some definition, which can include licensing, professional services, and so forth. So, Chuck, is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and I apologize for not picking up on that in your question, Member Byers. But yes, just because of the technical definition, the licensing is included. So,
okay, I'll move then the project be approved with the conditions of state.
All right, thank you, David. Do we have a second?
I second.
Thank you, Anthony. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, unanimously approved. Thank you, DES. Good luck with your project.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. We appreciate your review and your time today. And DES will buckle down on getting through this and getting our staff moved over to the Google suite of products. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we will move on to our next item on the agenda, which is the Department of Housing bringing forward the Homeowner Assistance Fund project.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Haley Greenberg. I am an engagement manager with the Arizona Department of Administration. I am joined here today by members of the Arizona Department of Housing who will introduce themselves now, followed by a brief overview of the project.
Good afternoon. I'm Cindy Stotler, Deputy Director at the Arizona Department of Housing.
Hello, Mr. Chairman and members of the community. I'm Chris Ligmont, the Information Technology Manager for the Arizona Department of Housing.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the Arizona Department of Housing has been required to implement a federal homeowner assistance fund program established under Section 3206 of the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021. The solution the Department of Housing is developing is the same solution the Arizona Department of Economic Security is utilizing for their emergency rental assistance project started earlier this year. The homeowner assistance fund may be used for assistance with mortgage and utility payments and other specified purposes. At this time, I will turn this over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed project and answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Haley. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I am here today to talk about our implementation of the Federal Homeowner Assistance Fund program. Starting with the mission of the Arizona Department of Housing, to for a little bit of background, our mission is actually in our name. We create and we manage the Section 8 Housing Choice Voucher Program for Yavapai County. But we are primarily a pass-through agency for federal programs and low-income housing tax credits that our customers use to create multifamily and single-family housing, as well as shelters and transitional housing for homeless persons. Next slide, please. Today, I'm here to talk about a new federal pass-through program called the Homeowner Assistance Fund. This program is part of the American Rescue Plan Act and is administered by the Department of Treasury. It was created to provide financial assistance and housing stability services to prevent foreclosures and homelessness resulting from the income loss during the pandemic. We have been allocated almost $200 million to assist low-income homeowners statewide. To be eligible, homeowners must be at or below 150% of area median income and have experienced a financial hardship after January 2020 that is due to the pandemic. The assistance that we may provide with the funding includes mortgage payments, utility payments, mortgage reinstatements, principal reduction, and interest rate reduction, as well as a few other items of assistance. An automated application and payment process is critical to the rapid distribution of these funds to prevent thousands of households from experiencing mortgage defaults, loss of utilities, foreclosures, and ultimately homelessness. Next slide. We received notification and administrative funding from Treasury in April of this year. Over the summer, agency staff viewed demonstrations from four vendors offering comprehensive program solutions. We wanted an application and payment system similar to the current Emergency Rental Assistance Program managed by the Department of Economic Security. All four vendors offered comprehensive outsourcing of the program, but Spiridion was already operating the Emergency Rental Assistance Program and contracted with DES via a state contract. We met with the DES staff at length and discussed the ERAP program, the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, and their relationship with Spiridion, which is great, as they said. Spiridion is very responsive, provides excellent customer service, and their system works very well. By using Spiridion, we can take advantage of programming already in place for applications, verifications, payments, and relationships with state utilities. And we can co-locate our customer-facing application so residents needing assistance can go to one site and choose rental or mortgage assistance. Spiridion's financial assistance management solution provides an online application, eligibility verification, document uploads, a workflow approval process, electronic distribution of funds, secure data storage, an audit trail, a real-time dashboard, and automated reports. Next slide. This is a fully outsourced program, so most of the technical responsibility are the vendors. The agency staff will provide oversight, project management, contract and program monitoring, federal reporting, and financial reconciliation. The vendor will onboard the agency into the existing system, customize it for the homeowner assistance program, and establish integrations with mortgage servicers, financial institutions, utility companies, and the county recorder's office. They will also establish protocols for electronic payments and complete those electronic payments. And they will be responsible for data security, an audit trail, a dashboard, and customized reports. We will share responsibility for establishing program guidelines and eligibility requirements, the implementation plan we are required to submit to Treasury, user acceptance training, change management oversight, report design, and any federal reviews and audits. Next slide, please. The program structure is fairly simple since this implementation is completely outsourced. The vendor will provide a project manager who is local and already working with DES, along with their subject matter experts in the various modules and implementation requirements of the program. Spiridion is the contracted vendor, and they manage the financial assistance management system. They will subcontract with Springboard Solutions for a customer service call center and with Tidal Basin for case management and adjudication, all three providing a comprehensive outsource program from application to payment. The agency will dedicate subject matter experts to provide overall program oversight, contract monitoring, any technical issues with payments or other integrations on our part, and financial reconciliation and reporting. Next slide, please. Speedy implementation is critical as we have thousands of households currently in mortgage delinquency and forbearance due to the pandemic. Another large benefit of going with Spiridion is the very quick implementation they will be able to achieve because they already have much of the programming and integration in the Emergency Rental Assistance Program already. We have a proposed 6-week implementation schedule with a pre-application eligibility website coming up in the first week. This is important to our customers and our partners as we are already getting many inquiries about this program. We will work with them on the implementation plan for Treasury and should complete that in 2 weeks. We need Treasury's approval of our plan to go live. The bulk of their work, taking about 4 weeks, is the financial assistance management system implementation and configuration, as well as the new integrations needed with the mortgage servicers, financial institutions, and the county recorder's office. User acceptance training is anticipated to take a little over 2 weeks, and then we will be ready to go live. Next slide. The bulk of the costs for this implementation are one-time and front-loaded in year one. The $1 million in professional services includes building a HAF portal, a Homeowner Assistance Fund portal, for Arizona, starting with an interactive eligibility site the first week, onboarding implementation of financial assistance management system, external system integrations with mortgage servicers, financial institutions, the county recorder, and our bank to enable electronic payments. The $1.1 million in license and maintenance fees includes a one-time license fee, hosting and support, and 8 months of hypercare. And what they call hypercare is their program that provides rapid implementation of change orders for the first 8 months. Since this program is brand new, we anticipate multiple changes in the first months after implementation, both from Treasury as they may change their guidance and are likely to change their guidance, and from us as we experience with the program and have issues or additional things we want to add to the program. The year two costs are annual license fees and maintenance. This is a 2-year program. Our goal is to disperse all the HAF funding in 24 months. After that, foreclosures will have been completed and it will be too late to reinstate mortgages. Next slide. Overall, the goals for the software program are to process applications timely and disperse all available funding. The detailed needs assessment we're currently performing will inform our additional goals based on key characteristics like mortgage type, FHA, VA, conventional, et cetera, racial and ethnic demographics of applicants, geographic areas served like low income and high minority population communities. Having an automated system like this will enable us to easily extract this information and report on all of our goals. And that leads us to the last major goal, which is accurate and timely reporting to Treasury. Obviously, this is a lot of funding and they will be closely monitoring our progress, as will the governor's office and all of our local partners in the state. Next slide. And that concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
All right, thank you, Ms. Stotler. Open it to the committee for questions. Eddie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question. It looks like this program, as stated in the PIDG, is required by the federal government. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that is correct.
So here's my question. I'm assuming that that would also include the other 49 states as well. Is that a good assumption?
Yes, that is correct.
So the question to the team, were we able to, you know, I'm always like not wanting to reinvent the wheel, but did we spend any time looking at maybe which state had the best implementation of this and that we would basically try to replicate or mirror that? Was that some discussion that was done with your team? Because it seemed like if there were other states, again, I don't know if everyone got it at the same time, I don't know, but I'd be kind of curious if any kind of discussion like that was happening with the team.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that's a really good question. And it is a brand new program. So there aren't other implementations yet. There are pilots, a few pilots up, but almost no one's fully implemented it yet because Treasury hasn't approved any plans and given their final authority. But we have been on numerous phone calls, weekly phone calls with our And I just started in June, so I apologize. I don't know all the acronyms, but there's a national organization for state agencies, and we're on those phone calls every week with other jurisdictions looking to implement housing homeowner assistance fund programs. And we talk about how we're implementing and what we're going to put in, the eligibility requirements and all the details. In addition, Spiridion, the vendor we chose, is already, I think, signed with Louisiana and Vermont, I know for sure. I'm not sure of other states. So they are implementing in other states, and the program templates will be very, very similar from state to state.
Yeah, that I really appreciate your answer, because the next question was going to lead to, I didn't see that an RFP was part of this process, and I was trying to figure out what was the criteria in picking, you know, what I would call, you know, the best, you know, vendors to support this based upon, you know, other implementations in the country. Can you elaborate a little bit more about the selection of the vendors?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. So as I said, staff, even before I came to the agency in June, were already getting demonstrations from other vendors who were offering a comprehensive solution. I think we knew going into this, we need a comprehensive solution to staff up really quickly and get the money out quickly. And when I came in June, I met with staff from the Department of Economic Security, staff from the governor's office, and kind of strategized on how to implement this program very quickly. And we kind of landed on Spiridion because all the vendors we talked to had a comprehensive system, but Spiridion was already in place. We could use what they have already done. We could get it up very, very quickly, and we could co-locate the landing site, you know, that's currently up there. So it was just decided that we would just go ahead. They're on state contract. We would go ahead and use that vendor to make sure we got this program up quickly and started the assistance as soon as possible.
All right. Thank you for your responses.
Thanks, Eddie. Mr. Byers, I saw you had a hand up.
Mr. Chairman, Cindy, for the last year and a half, I've been chairing a stakeholders group that's been dealing with eviction cases and rental assistance, includes DES and the governor's office, the courts, the providers, the attorneys for tenants and landlords. And DES brought up the rental assistance program using this product. And I'll be honest, there was some skepticism initially about DES being able to do this in a short period of time. I think because of the, you know, they got a lot of negative press on the unemployment insurance problems that emerged. But I can tell you that there's been nothing but positive comments about the process that DES has in this product. And I hear, I mean, I've got tenant attorneys and landlord attorneys, and everyone has been very complimentary of DES's operation of this. So I'm completely supportive of the idea of you now taking it and building on that success and all the programming they've done. So I'm very supportive.
Thank you, Mr. Byers. Any other questions or comments from the committee members? I have one, Ms. Stotler, which I noticed in the responsibilities that the role of project manager was still listed as TBD. And that's gonna be obviously a critical item for the success of the project. Where are you in that process? I know that sometimes there's a time lag between when you have to submit the slides and where we are today. And you know, what's the timeline to have that project manager on board to help drive this for you?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. That was a good catch. I believe as of yesterday, I've identified the project manager and she is a current staff member in another division of the Department of Housing, but she worked on the Save Our Home Hardest Hit Fund program that we ran for the last 8 years. That program's winding down and ending this year, but it was similar in mortgage assistance, principal reduction, forbearance, you know, adjudication, things like that. So she's very experienced in this field, and I believe she'll be a really good project manager with, like, given that experience and understanding the business of mortgage assistance. So just spoke with her and her supervisor yesterday, and I'm going to bring her on right now.
Okay, fantastic. Good to know. Okay, if there are any other questions, I will turn it back to Haley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. ASSET is recommending that the pitch be approved with the following conditions. Should development costs exceed the approved estimates by 10% or more, or should there be significant changes to the proposed technology scope of work or implementation schedules, the agency must amend the pitch to reflect the changes and submit it to ADOI ASSET and ITAC if required for review and approval prior to further expenditure of funds. Condition two, monthly reporting on the project status is due to ADOI ASSET no later than the 15th of the month following the start of the project. Failure to comply with timely project status reporting will affect the overall project health. The first status report for this project is due September 15th. That's all the conditions.
All right. Thank you, Haley. Members, any questions on those conditions? If there are no questions, I will accept a motion with regard to the project.
Motion to approve with conditions.
Thank you, Mr. Lang. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Byers. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you very much. The motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Ms. Stotler. And Mr. Zygmunt, good luck with your project.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much.
All right. Okay, we're going to move into our informational updates segment of our agenda. These are not voting items, but our informational updates provided by the respective agencies on these projects in flight. And we start with an update from DCS on the Guardian project.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jacob Crimmins, and I am an engagement manager with the Arizona Department of Administration. I'm joined today by members of the Department of Child Safety, who will now introduce themselves and provide an update on the overall status of their child's replacement project, also known as Guardian.
Good afternoon, everyone. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is James Dean. I'm the PMO and finance manager for the program and for the Department of Child Safety's IT department. Also joining, who I'll let you introduce themselves, is Matt Grant and Robert Navarro. So I'll let them say hi and introduce themselves really quick before we move on.
Hi, I'm Robert Navarro, the Assistant Director of Budget and Finance for the department.
And I'm Matthew Grant. I'm the Deputy CIO and current Acting CIO for DCS.
All right. And that is everybody joining on the line. So if we would want to go to the next slide. So as is currently reported, we are red for the sole sake of the fact that the original end date was June 30th of 2021. We are now in July and still working on the remaining two pieces of scope, which is reporting and child's decommissioning. We're actively having conversations still with DOA on submitting the end date change request based upon our new plan. So our plan currently is to get that over as soon as possible, so you all have the ability to see what our new end date is and get that voted on. And then when that occurs, it will shift the program from red to green. Because we'll be marching towards a new schedule. From a scope perspective, from a program, the release has already occurred in February. Everything is still moving forward from an operations standpoint, but from a program standpoint, the scope other than child's decommissioning reports has been completed. Budget is still showing as green. The 86-088-076 is still the current program budget. That has not changed. The times of when the money will be expended is changed as things shift to the right a little bit, but overall we're still planning on coming into that budget, and that has not changed at all. And then all of our current program active risks and issues are being managed and worked on accordingly. So all of those items are in hand as they come up and being tracked and managed accordingly per our processes. Next slide. So here's our project updates. This will almost look like a rinse and repeat because it is. There has definitely been some solid movement on reporting, but it is still red since we are behind from a schedule perspective. And then all the way at the bottom right, that lonely red square for decommissioning. Good news is as there's one remaining dependency. The bad news is it's migrating millions of documents from the old system to the new system. So that's currently being worked and is being developed in order to migrate those documents successfully. So that's kind of the long pole in the tent that's actively being planned and worked on as we speak today. Next slide. So overall, we didn't have any open action items that we recall from last ITAC. But from changes, so reports, we again have bumped up resources for reporting. I know it seems like we say that every month, but the good news is we do continue to onboard resources to support the reporting effort. Currently defined, there's approximately 70 some reports that are in scope that were planned, and that's part of our firm fixed effort. So as we bring up the resources needed, then those start moving through the process. The development does continue. We do have items that have been approved by the business, so that's fantastic. Anytime there are blockers or issues that come up from moving reports through our pipeline, they're addressed, they get worked on, and then we continue to move those through in order to get them to business review and ultimately to business approval. And it really is a critical focus for the team. While child's decommissioning, the next section is also critical as well. Reporting is one of those key items that the agency is striving to ensure is tracked and managed and getting done as quickly as possible. From a child's decommissioning standpoint, a bunch of detailed planning sessions were completed last month. There was one dependency that was holding things up with central registry. That actually has been completed. So the last dependency is the document migration that I alluded to before. That one is going to take a little bit of time because it does take a lot of preparation in order to do the development of migrating. I believe it's somewhere in the vicinity of maybe 7 or 8 million records from the old legacy system to the new one. As soon as that's done and validated, then it won't be immediate as it used to be called, where you just unplug and walk away, but at least the remaining decommissioning pieces will be relatively straightforward to shut everything down and get everything off the DES servers and archived away. From a focus area perspective, it's reports and child decommissioning, because that is really all that is remaining from an actual program scope perspective. Everything else is in M&O and is being tracked as in maintenance and operations. This is strictly all of the items that tie to the PIDG and tie to all of the actual detailed development effort. And then, of course, the newest one is our end date change request. So we're working internally to get that finished up so we can submit it over and have that come back to you all for voting. Any questions there before we move on to the next slide?
So I just have a comment, James. You know, the reports being the long tail on big projects like this is not a new story. And so, you know, I know that we've been looking at this for a little bit. I think as you come back with the change request, the thing that I'm interested to see to help support the timeline is going to be, I think you mentioned there's 70 reports that were in scope, effectively a burn down of, you know, how you're working through that, how those are moving through the process, where you can start, you know, as you'll be coming through in the next couple of months, we can start to see, is the velocity keeping up with the plan? Because that always seems to be, at least in the other projects I've monitored over time, that becomes the key item with reporting, because while there's things that are objective about reports, there's also some subjectivity when you get it in front of the end user, and to make sure that it really meets the needs of the business. So I know there's usually some back and forth on that. So that's something I think it would be very helpful for the committee to see, to help have confidence in the timeline. And then any, I'll say, actual velocities measured so far, right? As you've been adding resources and working on this, how are things actually progressing?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that's a great point. If you hear clicking, that's me just taking notes so that we can make sure that we come back with that information. I know we'll go to the next slide at some point, and you can kind of see a little bit of the burn down process and the stages that it go through for reports. But absolutely, we'll make sure that that information is included in the change request and reporting moving forward.
Okay, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, James, you know, I know these large projects, they have bumps in the road, and it may be what I'm going to raise is related to the reports, but I checked today, I'm still getting reports from our juvenile courts that workers are reporting a much less positive experience with Guardian, and they're having trouble. They say courts they can't get information when case managers change. They're not getting, I guess this would be a report, exits and entries by county, so they don't know how many kids are leaving the system and coming in. They can't get information regarding the placement of the child when the child moves. Are these known factors, and are these reports, or are these other issues? But I guess a second part is, are you gathering any kind of survey information from the field, people on the ground? The caseworkers, the courts, people are using the system to see if their experience is, say, as positive as this report is.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of committee, Mr. Byers, it's a really good question. I'll actually defer that to Matt and Robert from a little bit of for information they may know regarding those items and anything that we may not know immediately to answer your question right now. I'm taking notes to also make sure we can satisfy that and provide some information for it.
Mr. Chairman and committee and Mr. Byers, it's a little bit of a difficult question to answer for you, not knowing specifics of who they're. The reports that we're talking about are more for internal reporting. On it, I suspect maybe some of the feedback you're getting is from someone with an exchange that may not be functioning, and we would be happy to take that up with you offline on it to get some more details and get you back some more detailed information on that.
Okay, that's fine. And rather than even me, it might be better to meet with some of the juvenile court judges and
absolutely,
because they're that's why I talked to a lot of them, and I'm just getting these reports, so. Again, I understand these big projects are tough. So
sure.
Maybe if you communicate with them, and I don't know if you're gathering information from your own caseworkers who are on.
Yeah, I know Deputy Director Shalom has been working with the courts pretty diligently on that. So we will definitely get some feedback to her and get in on some of those meetings, maybe get some more details.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Rebecca.
Hi. Thanks, Mr. Chair. And hi, James. I know that this is part of the M&O and not part of the PIDG, but I did want to get an update on payments going out in a timely way to foster care families. Has that issue been resolved? I think I saw, this was over a month ago at this point, some additional news on the issue. So I was just wondering if you could give us an update.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Rebecca, it's always a pleasure to hear from you. That one I can definitely defer to Robert. He's tracking all those things diligently.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yeah, Rebecca, great question. So a majority of the issues have been resolved and payments are flowing out through the system. We do have some small pockets of complex placements. Namely, right now, the one that comes to the top of my head is our therapeutic foster care placements, which impacts about 150 kids that we are still working on a bug that's going to be resolved here by the end of the month. But the majority of the families are being paid both with our adoption subsidy program, our foster care program, and our kinship placement in a timely manner. It's a metric we track daily. But there are still some small pockets of issues that we have known bugs that we are working through to resolve.
Thank you for that update.
All right. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, James and the DCS team. You want to move forward with your presentation?
Yeah, this shouldn't take too much longer because I know there's a couple of other informational items after us. But this is that reporting plan that you will see. Everything goes through a specific amount of stages, starting from kind of that requirements review. The center is really the development and views being built. All the way on the far right is where you have testing, the business review, and then business validation. And this report, you'll see that 6 reports have been accepted. 8 are actually out for business validation. Those are stage 90 and stage 77, respectively. And then there's 14 reports and tests as of the time of this writing. There are some bugs that are impacting a small subset of reports, and those are being planned to be addressed in July. And when that happens, then those will continue to move forward to the right. And then with the onboarding of resources, we'll be able to better track the velocity and see kind of where we are now with a full stacked team of reports developers and managing that through the process. So that's it from a reports perspective. Next slide. Then we switch over to M&O. I know this isn't part of the page, and we've been really open about kind of what's going on for maintenance and operations. This is something that, as ITAC, you know, it's not part of anything from a voting. If this is a value, please let us know. If not, and we want to stick strictly to the PIDGE items, that's absolutely okay. We are happy to provide the information, but if it's too much, that's all right. The one thing I want to call out here is the backlog will grow when things get closed. In June, 304 requirements and bugs of different severities were closed, but only 1% of those were severity 0. That's pretty impressive, you know, this close after go live. So that means the system is stable, things are moving through. And then the bulk of them are severity 1s and 2s, which are ones that are, they're definitely needed, but it can have workarounds and things that will keep the business moving while we work through those and understand what's going on. So that's kind of what you'll see here. And I think there might be one more slide after this. And that's just, again, ODS issues with our operational data store kind of being worked on. We processed a lot of those technical change orders in June, which has helped continue to improve. We completed sprint 16 and 18 during the month of June because we switched to two-week sprints. With that, 3 of them just wound up ending in the month of June. There's 2 sprints scheduled for July. And then we're always monitoring the system. Our architecture is still stable. And then we're always working on business stabilization and understanding the pain points and kind of what is system driven and how can that be updated and adjusted in order to support the business. And that's it. That's it for our standard informational items.
All right. Thank you, James. Any new questions from the committee? Okay, one point of clarification for me, James, if we go back a couple of slides to the, the boxes for the reports, exactly this one. Sure. I would like to see a different format for the burn down because okay. This shows point in time where things are in the process. That's okay. But I want to see a progress, month over month on, where we are, and this doesn't allow us to see that, where were you last month? Where are you this month? And then with velocity, where do we expect you to be next month? Right.
Okay. Yeah. We can work on a more standardized burn down chart for you to give you that information.
Thank you. That'd be great.
You're welcome.
That's it for me. If there are any other questions, we'll move on to our next item.
All right, okay. Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jacob Crimmins, Engagement Manager with the Arizona Department of Administration. I'm joined today by members of the Department of Education who will now introduce themselves and provide an update to the overall status of their school finance payment system replacement project.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Chris Richardson, CIO, Arizona Department of Education. Just for your understanding, those that I saw on from our team, I saw Whitney Marsh, Deputy Chief of Staff, Steve Troxel, our new CTO, Chief Technology Officer, Nan Nesvig, Project Manager, Jean Fletcher, Executive Admin Assistant, and Lisa Meyerson Marshall, our A2A consultant. So since I am new commodity, I thought I'd mention a little bit. I'm with Arizona State University for the last 6 years as Deputy CIO there, leading the development organization and the analyst side of that. And then before that, 12 years at Honeywell in 10 different capacities, including global operations and some of their largest programs. So just FYI, a little bit about me. Great to see some familiar faces here, as well as some new folks. So hope to get some working context with you all as we go through. So thanks for that. Next slide, please. So you can see we've had a good month here since the last ITEC meeting. The parts we'll focus on, the most important piece is that our payment system launched on June 30th. We're looking solid for what will be the first run in production August 2nd. We had a great demo with the teams. I think really helped build mutual understanding both on the budget side and the IT side of what this system really is. That was actually a 6-hour session over 2 days, 2 weeks ago. Great dialogue, great questions. And I think both sides really kind of dug in ways that helped understand really what's happening. So now what we're doing is positioning ourselves for phase two. We had a lot of road ahead. On the budget side, there were some nuances, but these were all tied to timing of when invoices were supposed to hit versus when they did hit. But again, we're still right around 2% variance there. And I can dig into some risks that I guess were discussed last month in a minute here. So I'll pause briefly before I advance to the next slide in case there's questions. Okay, next slide, please. So a little bit more detail here. Like I said, really focused on making sure that we got this part in production and approved. So team's very pleased with that progress. Risk and issues, I guess last time, it was clear that there was some major IT transitions in ADE. CIO, CTO, and Director of Project Management all leaving around the end of June. Whitney and team put together with some input on how to build out the team. Myself, Steve are on here. Nan is acting in an additional capacity for the moment. And we're all really getting up to speed as quickly as possible. I had a week of overlap with the last team. Steve had 2 weeks of overlap with the last team. Nan has been here consistently for some time. So the way we're looking at this particular risk is just making sure that we gel as a group, and more importantly, that we really help build even more bridges with the A2A resources that are both part of the consulting side and the oversight teams, so that there's just a really clear understanding of what we're going to get done when, and that we're on the same page there. A few things, just a couple in the past. We had the approval for phase two change request near the end of June. We also had the GLBC update, or the that meeting on mid-July. That all went smooth. And the next big thing is the DRC documents for the end of August. Any questions to this point? Next slide is really just kind of all of our UAT testing. Everything that was open has been resolved. There's with minor bug fixes in the schedule backlog. So we're really looking great in terms of how we wrapped out phase one and as we enter phase two. But Mr. Chairman, that's really all we prepared for you today. And want to open up for questions.
Thank you, Chris. By the way, great to have you on board, and appreciate how you jumped in with both feet and working to get your arms around this. So thanks for providing the leadership. My quick comment before I open it up to the rest of the committee is just congratulations to the ADE team. This is a pretty aggressive timeline, and I know that the main objective was to take the most vulnerable parts of the legacy system and get something in place that could stand up and take over those functions. And just want to congratulate them getting that done in this first phase, first period. I think that puts everybody in a good position for, you know, to tackle the next segments. With that, I'll go ahead and open it up to the committee, though.
Hey, Chris, I don't have a question as much as a comment. as you ramp up and you really get your arms around the project, where you're at, where you're headed, you know, would it be possible for you just to speak to the committee at some level, just in terms of really the go forward plan, right? I'm assuming as you ramp up, the plan isn't to 100% just follow the playbook that was handed to you, but to really figure out how to optimize the resources you have, the dev cycles to really get the functionality and features that you guys need to fully land the plane and get the project to completion. So, you know, less from just a project KPI perspective, but more at some point, it would be nice to know just in terms of tweaks, changes, you know, your assessment in terms of what foundation that you want to build off of and how you want to carry it forward.
Yeah, it's a great point. In fact, it leads into a risk that's in the risk log for phase two that wasn't in the deck only because of we only had our Friday internal exec session to even prove that risk exists and what a mitigation plan is. But I would say the biggest piece, it's a relief that, you know, when you inherit a large visible program like this, that you move through first phase, you're set up for a very key deliverable, which is, you know, not only the end of June go live, but the actual testing in production in August with actually delivering funds to the LEAs. but it's clear that in the process of working together for this SFPS project, that there's some definitely some angst and heavy ties on our functional team. And so there's only so much you can do while you're running your business processes, while you're overhauling a very complex scenario. So one of our risks with some compressed timelines for phase two, we're really going to dig in. And to your point, Doug, we're going to look to see what must-have things have to get done, what sets us up for success, what shows a very well-designed, data-driven plan for what we can deliver. And there is some chance that we either will need to add some additional consulting resources to stay within the aggressive timeframe for the end of fiscal year, or potentially extend out. But I think your point is we really want to see that we can get as much automated as we can. We don't want to be pushing things out and having this go, you know, be, you know, in kind of an enhancement mode for years. I've seen that happen all the way back to my Honeywell days, where there's, you know, ERP stuff that's left over for some time. We don't want to be in that situation. So, you know, we're getting the teams together. We're inviting Lisa to come with us to dig through and really make sure that our assessments for phase, our assessed plan for phase two is really where we want to be. And we think we'll have a good response to that by the September timeframe, where we'll know exactly what we'll be doing by the end of the year.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions on this informational update? Okay. Well, Chris, thank you very much. Again, congratulations to the team on their good work. Please share our congratulations with them and wish you best of luck in moving to the next phase.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, last informational update is on child care e-licensing with the Department of Health Services.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Once again, my name is Haley Greenberg. I am an engagement manager with the Arizona Department of Administration. I am joined here today by members of the Arizona Department of Health Services. The team will introduce themselves, then provide the committee with an informational presentation of their child care facility licensing solution.
Hi, this is Paula Mattingly. I'm the CIO.
Good afternoon. I'm Ryan Sadler. I'm the apps manager.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Luke Evans, Project Management Office Manager with the Department of Health Services, presenting to you an informational update on the recently approved ADOA asset project supporting the licensure of Arizona's child care facilities. Due to the past successes of the agency Salesforce e-licensing ecosystem, namely medical marijuana and the adult use marijuana program, the agency will soon begin integrating another licensing type, child care licensing. Although not an official continuous quality improvement project, processes, procedures, and practices are being reviewed to standardize child care facilities licensing processes. This is being made possible by significantly reducing paper processes, retiring old and disconnected information systems, and optimizing data delivery mechanisms for downstream consumers. The agency plans to use a system integrator, then transition to our in-house Salesforce maintenance and operations team. We support the marijuana features today. Next slide, Haley. It is the vision of the agency to add licensing types to this ecosystem as needs and funding are prioritized. Child care facilities will be followed by community health workers and so on. Other licensing types will likely follow over the short and long term. Salesforce has given the agency a single shared architecture that reduces division of licensing staff onboarding time as new licensing types are added. It provides a single source of the truth for operational reporting and analytics. And lastly, Salesforce is a self-modernizing platform. New user and security features are added seasonally. We anticipate a significant increase in the longevity of Salesforce applications as compared to traditional platformless application development solutions. Next slide, please. Thank you, Haley. And lastly, the project development costs are estimated at about $900,000 and includes the retirement of aging child care facilities applications. On behalf of the Department of Health Services team, thank you for your continued support of this initiative and overall vision. Next slide. That's really it. Members of the committee, Mr. Chairman, I would like to field any questions that you may have today.
Okay, any questions from the committee? All right, one of the things I would do want to go ahead and highlight to the committee, and I think we tried to show that. If you maybe back up a couple of slides to show this one, there we go. So in this case, we're explaining, I'll say an approach, where by adopting a platform, making additional investments on that platform, we'll say makes sense for the organization as they can leverage the existing investments. We want to be clear and transparent about those additional investments. And that's why this informational update is here. The cost of this does not exceed the $1 million threshold from an ITAC approval standpoint. But we also didn't want folks, raising questions of, we understand that, whatever some amount of money that might be over the ITAC threshold gets spent across a few projects, all in a common platform. But these are solving discrete business processes and business process functions for health services in this case. So we want to make sure that, we're clear about, why we're bringing this forward as an informational item. Of course, the committee has purview to ask for more information, if it feels appropriate. But we wanted to be clear about why we're bringing this forward in this fashion. Does that generate any questions from the committee, Mr. Byers? I think you're on mute.
So these are child care facilities that you're licensing, right? Not the individual workers, child care workers. So how many child care facilities are there that you're going to license for the $900,000 that you're spending?
Approximately 3,200.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Health Services team. Appreciate that. I believe that brings us to the end of our agenda for today. I will note to the committee, we're provided a written update on the MyDEQ project, which I think had a small schedule overrun. But even since they registered that small schedule overrun, it has actually already completed and is now closed out. So that's why it was just provided as a written update, and we didn't ask them to come and present to say that they had already completed the items in their schedule. I believe we will see them coming back for their next phase of the MyDEQ for the next, I said next phase, really it's the next set of applications. These are the next processes that they'll be automating, again, leveraging a platform approach. So with that, I will go ahead and call our meeting to a close. Our next meeting is scheduled for August 18th, same time, and we will use the same format. So thank you all for your time today, and we'll talk to you then. Thanks. Bye now.
Thank you.
All right, let's go ahead and stop the recording and the live stream.